This episode of the PHP Architect Podcast is brought to you by the CodeWorks 2009 Conference Series, coming to a city near you this fall. For more information, visit cw.mtacon.com.
Mateys, and welcome to the PHP Architect Podcast. I be Captain Marco Tabini, and with me tonight are Sean Coates,
PHP Architect Podcast,
Keith Casey,
I,
Elizabeth Naramore,
Arr, matey,
Carl Evans.
I'm in London, so I can't do the pirate thing.
And Beth Tucker.
Greetings, all.
So in case you're wondering why we're sounding stupider than usual, it's not because of the two-drink minimum, but because this Saturday, September 19th, was Talk Like a Pirate Day. And of course, we're not recording this on Saturday. Most likely you're not listening to this on Saturday, but we couldn't pass up on the opportunity to actually sound like idiots and speak like a pirate. So anyway, welcome to another episode of the PHP Architect Podcast. I am Marco Tabini, your host, and you'll listen to the people who are on the podcast this week. Just in case what I was saying was not very clear, we have Sean Coates. Hey, Sean.
Hi.
Keith Casey. Hey, Keith.
Hey, good morning.
Elizabeth Naramore.
Hello.
Cal Evans.
Hi, y'all.
And Beth Tucker.
Hi, everyone.
So before we get started with the podcast proper, there are a few meta pieces of information that I wanted to pass along. One of them is, of course, that each episode of our podcast has its very own page on the PHP Architect website. All you need to do is point your little browser, whether you're using Safari, Firefox, or Internet Explorer, to phparch.com/podcast. That's phparch.com/podcast. And there you can leave comments, give us ideas, let us know how bad we sound this week, and how lame our jokes are. And most of all, you can give us feedback and let us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what we could be doing different. So once again, that's phparch.com/podcast. You might be able at some point also to subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. We're waiting on Apple to eventually get off their ass and add us to their feeds, but just for the moment, you can still subscribe manually, and the instructions are on our podcast page. So tonight we have quite a few topics to go through, which we came up with all at the very last minute. I'd like to start with an interesting post on Brandon Savage's blog that I came about the other day while I was browsing. And again, we'll post links to all these posts and web pages on our website, phparch.com/podcast, in case you missed it the other 15 times I said it already. Brandon's post is about training your employees. And he actually points to a tweet by James McGovern that says, "Stop worrying about what happens if you train and they leave, and start worrying about if you don't train and they stay." What do you guys think? Sean, what do you think about the value of training your employees?
Well, I think it's just kind of like any other thing you do to treat your employees well. Once PHP developers especially get to a certain level, then they can just do whatever they want, really. I mean, I have pretty much choice of whoever I want to work for. So if I'm not happy in a position, if I don't feel like I'm getting any training, then that's the kind of thing where I feel like, you know, I'm not really willing to stay here anymore, and I could go do whatever I want. So I totally agree. If you're not going to train your employees, what you need to worry about is the quality of employee that you keep. And it's just kind of you don't really keep up with the times, and you'll stagnate, and you just won't be doing good work.
Cal, you do a lot of training for iBuildings. What do you think?
Well, you know, I agree with Sean. At some point, developers get to a point where they can move around. And you know, we've all just come through a recession, and everybody just kind of hunkered down where they were. But that's ending, and I'm starting to see jobs appear everywhere. So if you're not training your developers, if you're not training them right, then your creative talent is going to start walking to those places that do treat them right.
Well, but do you think that, there are lots of ways you can actually train your employees. And, you know, the typical one is you send them to a training course. But are there any other ways? Like, I happen to think that training is sort of an ongoing thing. It doesn't matter if you've done web development for 10 years. You'll still need to learn new things.
Training involves everything from your seniors have to be told that they have to mentor the juniors to you requiring that your employees get involved in local user groups, if possible, all the way up to, attending conferences. And, oh, if there were only a good magazine about PHP, people could subscribe to, you know, that kind of stuff.
I thought they stopped printing that good magazine about PHP.
Ouch. Just that hurts.
Harsh, guys. Harsh. Come on.
Just remember that I can drive up and I know where you live.
Yeah, you
and
do
so can Beth.
So unless you've moved in the last 12 months, beware.
So what you're saying is I should start looking for a place.
Definitely.
Hide out.
Training doesn't have to be, I'm going to send somebody to a training course, but that's a vital piece of it, especially for your junior and your mid-levels. But, the greatest team that I ever had the opportunity to manage, the CEO came in to me and said, I'm sorry, but you only get $3,500 a year per developer for training. You know, spend it wisely. And at that point, training became, playing Call of Duty and things like that. The new Xboxes were expensed. But no, I mean, training takes a lot of different forms. Sometimes it does cost money. Sometimes it doesn't cost money. But training is not about the money. Training is about the commitment to bringing your employees up and keeping them constantly refreshed.
I think two people are concerned about the upfront cost of training, but they need to look at how much it costs if your employees aren't learning new skills and they're still doing things the same old way, which is probably
Absolutely.
A lot slower and a lot more inefficient than the newer ways. Or the cost if you're not keeping up on new security trends and things like that. I mean, that is a major cost if something happens to your site because your employees aren't up to date on the new things that need to be done to keep your site secure as well.
Well, and the cost that Sean mentioned, if a developer walks, then you've lost all of the money that you've spent in training that person. And I count their salary. You know, if you've had an employee there for 5 years, you've spent 5 years worth of salary training that person in the way you want things done. And to let that just walk out the door because you're not willing to spend a couple $100 or, $500 or $600 on training materials and courses, it just doesn't make sense to me.
And it doesn't really need to be expensive. I mean, one of the things that I've always done in my career is I've always kept on top of news and trends, and it's really easy. You know, the first thing I do in the morning is I check my feed reader and I see if there's anything that's particularly interesting. And I'll look through it, and if there's stuff that I find a little bit less interesting, I'll put it off to later in the day. But, I mean, one example is I've been reading phpdeveloper.org, Chris Cornott's site, since 2001, every day I work.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't cost my employer anything. It costs a little bit of my time. But I consider that part of my workday because it's important for me to know about things that are happening. If there's a PHP exploit or if there's, I found out about a tool called Daemon. I don't even remember whose blog it was from. Someone casually mentioned it on Planet PHP a couple weeks ago. And I used it in a project 2 days later and it saved me probably 3 days of development. So it's the kind of thing that is a really good investment, even if it doesn't cost your employer anything.
Let's move on to another topic. Another blog post that caught my eyes over the last couple of weeks has been an entry by Paul M. Jones, very interestingly titled 40%. Now, Sean, Paul works with you for OmniTI. What can you tell us about that blog post?
Well, Paul is kind of my peer at OmniTI. He manages a team of developers as well. He's a web architect over where we work. And he has been working on the Solr framework for, I don't even know how long, several years. I remember seeing it many years ago. And it's one of his side projects, and we use it internally for some projects, and we use it for some client stuff. And he realized over the last few months that he just didn't have enough time to work on it. And I'm sure everyone's been in a place where we're working and they don't have time for their side projects and they feel like kind of start to get stale and they aren't spending enough, they aren't giving enough attention to them. So he identified the problem and he went to management and he said, hey, look, I really like to spend some time on this. What can we do? I don't know how much they talked about it, but the end result was that in the end, they decided to give him up to 40% of his time to work on solar. So that helps us internally, but it also contributes back. It's all the stuff he's doing during work hours is staying open source. We might make some minor changes internally, but the just for specific projects, but the intent is to keep everything in the main trunk, as far as I know, and to push everything back out to the community.
Cool. Now, I don't know much about solar. Can you tell us what's unique about it?
No, I haven't really worked with it very much. It's pretty minimal. It doesn't have a lot of the stuff that you would see in something like Pear or in Zen Framework, where there's all kinds of weird connectors for websites that people might never use. The idea is that it's a pretty simple, straightforward model view controller kind of setup. And he has a templating engine in there that's based on PHP called Savant. I really can't speak terribly intelligently about it because I haven't actually worked on one of the projects that were using it internally. I have peeked at it a little bit, and it looks interesting. It has some interesting ideas, but I really kind of like that it's minimal. And that's what I really like about getting into some of the frameworks where it's really overwhelming and other ones are kind of lean and really straightforward. And it's definitely one of the ones that's more on the lean side.
And if you're looking to learn more about Solr, there's an article on it. In PHP Architect, we had a framework shootout issue in June of 2009, and one of the frameworks reviewed was Solr.
Excellent. Thanks for the plug. That always helps.
Not a problem.
Now, the next topic is, tonight we're sort of skimming along a few topics rather than going a lot into one of them. The next topic actually comes from Sean, so I'm going to very quickly hand it over to you, and it's a post entitled, If You Code, You Should Write. Sean.
So this is a post from Brian Jones, who's worked with PHP Architect in the past. I think he was one of the, or if not the original editor-in-chief, right?
He was the original editor-in-chief, yeah. Yes. He actually
worked on Python Magazine as well?
He did. He started working for PHP Architect is that he committed the one cardinal mistake of dealing with me, which was we had just published the first issue of PHP Architect, and he called me up and started complaining about all the spelling mistakes and the horrible grammar. And then he made the final mistake of telling me, if I were doing this, I'm doing a much better job than you are. And so we hired him. And
yes, I know how that works.
So
the blog post is basically the title is called, or I think you already mentioned it, but the title is If You Code, You Should Write, and that's the gist of the article as well, is that if you make your living as a programmer, then you should also look at also expressing some of your thoughts and opinions and that sort of thing, whether it's just through blogging or through writing articles or books or whatever. And I brought it up because I thought it was important, and I think that I totally agree. I think that people can basically make their careers off of not necessarily blogging, but getting involved in the community and writing, at least once in a while about different things that they might have an opinion on. And it kind of helps get your name out, and it helps people recognize you, and it starts good conversations. Believe it or not, you actually learn a lot from writing, where you have to do some research once in a while, or people will totally disagree with you, and that's okay. And you'll learn just from other people's opinions about, if they reply on your blog and tell you that you're all wrong.
Actually, you research your blog posts? I figured out what I'm doing wrong now.
You can tell I haven't blogged since January. And that was a rant.
I think writing and expressing those ideas is one of the things that makes a difference between a mid-level developer and a senior-level developer, because you really need your seniors to not only be good at what they do, but you need them to be able to pass along those skills and to mentor mm-hmm. the other people on the team. And if they're not doing that externally, they're probably not doing it internally.
Well, see, I think that I absolutely agree with you, and I think that there is a threshold of self-confidence about which you actually do want to spread the word out. And actually, it reminds me of the way technical people seem to relate to the telephone. One of my biggest pet peeves is people who, for some reason that I have never quite understood, are actually afraid of using the telephone to call somebody else. And you know, 20 years ago, they had no choice. If they wanted something done, your choices were either you write them a letter and wait 2 weeks for it to arrive, or you call them and you talk to them right now.
You're forgetting telegrams.
Well, those were expensive. at least they used to be expensive in Italy. I don't know what they're like here. But one of the main drawbacks of the internet is that email and you know even tools like Skype are the ultimate passive aggressive tools. You can send an email, somehow convince your conscience that you've done your job, you've passed the information along, and now the ball is in somebody else's court. Now, unfortunately, emails get lost. The meaning of what you say is usually not very clear in email. And for Christ's sake, you have a phone next to your desk. It's a 100-year-old technology that works, and I just can't understand why people can't use the freaking phone.
Well, I personally prefer email over phone because then I have a record of what was discussed, what was decided, what you know, how it all went. My brain is not
good. Yeah, but that's what follow-ups are for.
Nothing to be able to go back and see the email thread, you know, the trail, you know. I personally prefer it. I don't know. Plus I hate people pretty much.
Well, I prefer email because then you can set aside time. You can say, okay, I'm going to deal with all my email now and spend a half hour, 45 minutes taking care of those things. If you're constantly on the phone, calling, expecting calls, whatever, you have these constant interruptions that just completely blow my day. I don't know about you guys.
Well, maybe I'm just strange that way. What can I say?
Yeah, probably.
I think it's you, pretty much, Marco.
Well, an email also gives me the chance to gather my thoughts, express them coherently. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you can see on these live things, I'm not real great. So, you know, the phone's like a podcast with only two people.
It's also 3 o'clock in the morning there.
That's true.
But anyway, my personal opinion hasn't really changed much from what you told me. I still think you did that people are just wusses and for some reason they're afraid of talking to other people. But the writing goes very much along with that. A lot of people that I meet at conferences have really good ideas. Some of them have really good experiences. Sometimes I'll meet somebody that has a very unique take on PHP just because of the way they use it. And they will not want to write an article for PHP Architect just because they don't think that what they have to say is good enough. And really, they don't want to expose themselves to ridicule or to negative feedback, which at the end of the day, is really what makes writing a blog or writing an article interesting. Because as all of you said, if you don't write something, if you don't put it in writing, if you don't communicate it to other people, then no, you will never find out if what you're doing is right or wrong, or if somebody has a better way of doing it.
Right, but goes back to the point Keith was making that, you know, if you're a senior, if you've got a senior, they need to be able to be mature enough to not only express themselves, but to be able to either defend their position or correct themselves.
Right.
Well, and it also goes back to, Liz, you were talking a couple of weeks ago about PHP women and the whole RTFM sort of mindset of mm-hmm. people are so focused on, well, we definitely have a community that says, you know, go and figure it out yourselves. But then part of that is people have a fear of, okay, well, maybe I'm doing it the wrong way. What if this mm-hmm. isn't the right way? Do I really want to open myself up to that ridicule? I mean, within right, DC PHP, we have a constant problem in finding people to present because that exact thing.
Right, especially with writing. I mean, it's like a permanent record. You know, you're putting your thoughts permanently out there for anybody and everybody for an undetermined amount of time to basically come and try to shoot you down or shoot your points down. And it's very intimidating mm-hmm. for people, especially someone who is you know, maybe not the best writer in the world. They're really smart, but maybe their, you know, their grammar isn't the greatest or their spelling or whatever. So yeah, I think it's totally intimidating, and then that's unfortunate.
I don't really have a whole lot of sympathy for that, to be honest. Like, if you're not willing to put yourself out there, you're never going to get good at it. Like, you don't learn to drive a car or a bike or do anything, really, without falling off once.
Well, you know, in this country, you don't learn to drive a car, period.
Says the Italian.
Says the Canadian.
Sean, I totally agree with you. And the same thing rings true, like you just said, Keith, for speaking and for any of that stuff that puts you out there, that makes you vulnerable to, I don't want to use attack, I think that's a little harsh, but, you know, to criticism for sure. If you're working on your own code, that's one thing, but, you know, to go out there and put yourself in front of people and put your thoughts down on paper for all to see, or in bits and bytes for all to see, yeah, that's intimidating, but you're right. I mean, if nobody can get over that, then we have a problem.
Actually, well, Brian, it used to be a lot easier when it was just going into print. I mean, I've been writing articles that predate the web for different magazines, and when I didn't have to take criticism online as comments of part of what I wrote, it was a whole lot easier just to put things out there. I tweeted that I likened it to technical blogging is like playing Clue. You make your supposition, you wait for somebody to prove it wrong.
Well, that's interesting. But, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Elizabeth, but for once I have something interesting to say. So, it's interesting what you said, Cal, because just a couple of days ago I was doing an interview with someone, and that interview will eventually make its way to our podcast. But we were talking about the way publishing something on the internet differs from from being, for example, on TV or publishing a book through a traditional channel. And this person is actually very much involved with the arts community. And he was telling me that artistic people actually love the internet specifically for that immediate feedback, that sort of raw feedback that they get, that they don't get on TV, they don't get in a theater environment where there's a lot of peer pressure to clap along with everybody else. It's not as easy to be a heckler in a theater full of people. It's 5,000 or 6,000 people, as it is to be on the internet where you have almost complete anonymity. And interestingly enough, as raw as sometimes inappropriate as the feedback that you get on the internet is, people who are in the business of essentially making other people happy, entertaining other people, actually love the type of feedback that they get on the net. The problem is that, of course, we're not talking about movie stars. We're talking about developers and the reaction that they have to the feedback that they get on the internet is very, very different.
Brian mentions this in the blog entry too. He says he makes an analogy to programming, where as you're a junior developer and as you're just starting to learn things, you write code that has lots of bugs in it, and I don't think it extends it to saying that it's insecure, but I will, or it doesn't perform very well. And you learn those things over time by feedback. And he says in the blog entry, this is a lot like writing, where you might jot down your thoughts and realize by the time you're done writing that what you wrote down an hour ago is no good, or your editor might say, hey, you need to fix this. And that's totally okay. That's how you learn. That's how you do things better.
Well, it happens all the time to me that I throw away entire blog posts because I get to the end and I realize that it's complete rubbish.
Yeah, it's like refactoring, right?
Well, in my case, it's more like throw it away.
Discarding.
Yeah, just discarding and get another coffee.
Well, Joel Spolsky said, 7 or 8 years ago now, that, I mean, the best way to get better at code is just to write more and more and more. And you just learn, hopefully you're also reviewing it and going back and figuring out better ways of doing things, but you make all those mistakes, you figure out how to do those things. And ideally you make those mistakes in private. DCPHP, we've been doing some code reviews on a month-to-month basis, and just seeing the sorts of things that come out and the things that people identify has been really helpful. We're trying to get over some of the RTFM attitude, but I think it just takes being willing to go out there and try things.
I think another interesting thing about publishing online, I mean, besides just the feedback and possibly the comments or the negative comments that you get, there also comes a certain responsibility because you've put yourself out there as someone who knows about this topic. And so what tends to happen is you get people writing to you asking for help on the topic and things like that. So you almost put yourself out there as a mentor of sorts. And so it does become a little bit more work than just writing the article now, since people, you become more accessible to people as well. But as far as writing and grammar and things like that, I mean, if that's what's holding people back, I mean, maybe people just don't understand how accessible it is for them to be able to publish something, because at PHP Architect, all you have to do to get an article in is send me a good proposal. We'll talk about it. And as far as the spelling and grammar and things like that, we're there to help you out with that. And so it goes through an editing process. And so we're not going to let you publish something that, you know, doesn't make any sense. So it's a little bit of a safer way to publish than even just your own personal blog, which maybe has fewer audience members, but doesn't have that support system there helping you out with publishing it either.
Right. I mean, my attitude with publishing anything online is, if you're going to be a jackass to me, I really could care less. If you're going to say something useful, I'm going to learn from you. If you're going to say something funny, I'm going to laugh with you. But at the end of the day, I really don't care if you want to be a malevolent git. And I think that's the attitude that more people should take. Just, you know, give it a try. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it doesn't work in spectacular ways. But you're right. If you don't try, if you don't give it a try, you'll never get better at it.
Hey, this leads into something that I blogged about on the iBuildings blog this week is, yeah, it's easy to write things and put them out there, but 2 years down the road, is that still relevant? And is somebody going to find your old blog post that has code in it that, you know, 2-3 years ago was considered best practices, but now we know you don't use underscore get inside a SQL select statement, so maybe you need to clean that up. I blogged about the fact that there's a lot of old advice floating around there, and when new people come into the language, they might stumble across that. I know nobody cuts and pastes code straight out of a blog and uses it, but we need to pretend like they do. And so if you're out there posting, if you're blogging, go back through your old posts, either correct them or at least mark them as this is old advice, or this was for PHP 5.0 and 5.3 is now out. You know, put something on there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. When I was given a quick presentation on what's new in 5.3 to our local PHP user group, Oink Pug, I will give them a plug. I wanted to give them some links of, you know, because we did a lightning talk. So I had, you know, like 10 minutes to tell them everything that was new in 5.3, which was pretty funny. So I'm looking for some good tutorials to show them, you know, where to go. And some of the tutorials that were written on blog posts were written when the discussion for the syntax was the double colon, which obviously ended up not being the case. So, you know, I had to give these newbies a word of warning that, you know, even though this article was written maybe a year ago, you got to make sure that what you're reading is up to date. And so don't, you know, if you see the double colon, then you'll know that it's not entirely accurate. So yeah, Cal, that's a really good point. If you've written something that maybe has changed majorly or something that you know that you're promoting inaccurate information, you might want to go back and just, you know, refactor your article for the other people who are reading it.
I think that's a lot more work than I'm willing to put in. Like I have a couple hundred entries on my blog, and there's no way I'm going to go back through every month and check them to make sure nothing has changed. I mean, I think it's fair to assume that anything that's more than a couple months old is potentially outdated. I've gone back and marked a few of them specifically. I had an entry on building PHP 5.2 on Leopard when Leopard first came out, and that doesn't work anymore, that procedure that I outlined, just because Mac ports has changed. So I added a note to the top that said something like, you know, I'm updating this, or I will update this eventually. This is just here for reference, and people still see it, but I don't have time to go through everything I've ever written, especially stuff that's a few years old and just doesn't apply at all anymore.
Well, I wouldn't suggest you refactor those. I would just suggest that you know, put something at the top of it that says, this is old. Don't rely on this or research it more before you use it.
Yeah, I mean, it has a date.
Yeah, you'd almost want to like flag some sort of expiration date where after that date it pops up a little message or has something there that says, hey, don't use this anymore, and then never have to think about it again.
Well, but do you really think that people just blindly open web pages without
Yes.
Yeah, they do, actually.
Never mind. Next. Moving on.
PHP 3 code out and paste it into their new application. Yeah, I think they do that.
Well, that, folks, that's all we have for today then. Beth, you want to give us a quick rundown of what's coming up in PHP Architect? Anything cool on the board?
Well, I talked about the September issue last time. So the October issue is going to be very great, too. We're talking about some different graphic manipulation items, and we also have some interesting articles on other processes to help you with getting mobile applications up and running, which is also very interesting. So stay tuned for those.
Excellent. Very good. And don't forget that a stop of CodeWorks may be coming to a city near you in the next over the next couple of weeks. Many of us, in fact, I think almost all of us, will be at one or more of the stops of CodeWorks, which starts next Tuesday in San Francisco, and then every 2 days moves on to Los Angeles, then to Dallas, then to Atlanta, then to Miami and Washington, D.C., and finally to New York. If you want more information, there are still some tickets available. You can visit cw.mtacon.com. That's cw.mtacon.com. Now, since we're also all going to be on the road over the next couple of weeks, there may be a slight delay in getting a podcast out to you, but we'll try to do something cool at the conference and post it as soon as possible. Until then, thank you for listening, and I want to thank you all for being here. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Keith. Thank you, Elizabeth, Cal, and Beth. And until the next time, stay safe and keep coding.
Are you using a Mr. Microphone?